And welcome into the latest Big O Show, the podcast with the Hall of Famer Orlando Pace, talking football on this championship weekend in the NFL. We've got two great matchups, of course, Green Bay hosting Tampa Bay. We've got Brady and Rodgers, and then in the AFC, the Chiefs hosting the Buffalo Bills. And Big O, I've wondered really throughout the week, because you played in two NFC championship games, do you think a little bit every year when this week rolls around, do you think a little bit about those games you played in?
Oh, absolutely. Probably some of the funnest times I've had just playing football, because the energy is different. NFL playoff football is the media coverage is up and that's what you really play for as a player, to get in those situations where you have an opportunity to play in the Super Bowl. So it's an exciting week. The focus is at an all-time high for all four of these teams that's involved. So it should be an exciting brand of football. I know the NFL is happy. They still have three or four of their marquee quarterbacks in there. So they love to see those type of matchups in the Super Bowl. So just with those big-name quarterbacks in it.
I've always said to people, my favorite Rams games – well, did not even like Super Bowl 34, of course, it's the ultimate. You win the Super Bowl. But the championship games, because they were at home, had a totally different feel than playing in a Super Bowl. Like, they're almost, I don't want to say they're not bigger, but maybe more memorable.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the playoff games here are more memorable. So when you hear people talk about St. Louis, it isn't a football or NFL city. When you walk in that dome, and anybody that's been to a game there in the playoffs, It's second to none. I mean, I can remember playing against Minnesota, all I remember is those foam fingers. Everybody had one, and it was the dome was rocking. And I remember every playoff game, NFC Championship games, the fans were going crazy. So just to when you feel that energy as a player, there's nothing else better to have that type of support, especially during the playoffs where you're trying to go win a championship.
That game with the Vikings, it was insane. I think they're called like noodles or something.
noodles.
But it added to the whole intensity, the madness in the building. I've always wondered, going into that game, you guys had the great season, but I think the whole league was still saying, I don't know, these guys, yeah, they got this Kurt Warner, that's a nice little story, but I don't know. Like, did you feel that doubt, and did you guys have any doubt before you got into a playoff game and actually had to do it?
You know what? We really didn't. We felt like we were the best team, in the nation, man. We thought we were the best team in the NFL. We felt that way. And then to come out and Isaac Bruce first play of the game, we go 70 on him really quick. We knew at that point we had arrived, and there was nothing the Vikings could do at that point. We knew we were gonna win in a rout at that point because we were so hyped. It felt like a Super Bowl game. And I remember just that whole week leading up to that game and getting out there and, everybody's talking about it. You're talking about it. The news media is just going crazy. But we were so hyped for that game. It was unbelievable. And then to come out and just, make it almost a track meet, which was really fun and exciting to score the way we scored. It was an exciting brand of football. So.
And then that gets you to the NFC Championship game with Tampa. I actually spent that week in Tampa. We did the opponent view and interviewing Warren Sapp and Derek Brooks. And I think Sapp was pissed off because everybody was talking how good the Rams were, and he was like, well, we're pretty good too. But we
play. You know what? He's still pissed off. I run into him and Brooks and all those guys, at the Hall of Fame or different events, and they still feel some kind of way about that game. I forgot the receiver's name. Was it a catch? Wasn't it a catch? That kind of thing.
Was it Bert Emanuel?
I think so. Yeah, it was Bert Emanuel. Yep, absolutely. And they're still pretty pissed about that game because they felt like that was their year, their defense. And, obviously the buildup between the greatest show on turf and that Bucs defense was because they, it was a low-scoring game. It was really at their pace. And then, obviously Ricky Pearl came up with that big catch in the end zone to kind of seal it. But, there's no better feeling to win that championship game, especially at home.
You're winning 5-3 at halftime. There was a safety in there. Are you guys stunned at that point? Like, what the hell? We've only got 5 points. And what's Mike Martz, Dick Vermeil? Tell me about halftime in that game.
You know, it was all confidence. That's one thing that we had. We just got to go out and score, defense, continue to play well. We knew it was going to be a challenge going into that game. They're a good defensive ball club. We just needed to find the holes. And on that play that Ricky scored, they you know, catch him on a blitz. Kurt was really good at, you know, identifying the blitz and you know, really finding Ricky on that play. But we knew we could score on him. We just had to get in rhythm. You know, do what we do, but it was a tough fought game. And that's the thing about that team. I know we get a lot of credit for being finesse and scoring fast, but we really could play any style of football. And that was just a physical game up front on both sides of the ball. And, you know, a low scoring game, and we came out with the victory.
Yeah, the famous The Catch by Ricky Prohl, which Isaac Bruce says is still his favorite catch. I said, no, about your career. He goes, hey, that's part of my career. And I'm like, okay.
Hey, he was on the field, so I guess, you know.
It was, as only Isaac could put it, of course. He wanted to argue about it. But it was 6-5. So I went back and looked because I still, you know, you think about it almost like it was like the last second. It almost kind of feels that way now historically. But there was about a little under 5 minutes in the game. But it's a 3rd and 4. And what – was the play called to take that deep shot, or I feel like we overanalyzed. Like even when Isaac caught the Super Bowl touchdown, the play call involves like 3 or 4 or 5 different things, right? It wasn't so March didn't say throw it to Ricky in the end zone. That was just part of one of the options.
Yeah, one of the options. I think the safety ended up blitzing, which I tried to pick up late on that play. So I think that was just the option, a single man coverage, and you know, Kurt made a great go. Throw and Ricky made an awesome catch, man. So I think it just worked that way. Because I think that was Ricky's only touchdown of that year, though, right? So I don't think we were designing a play for Ricky specifically to score on that play, but obviously just reading that defense and what they gave us, you know, and he just made a play on the ball. But, you know, I don't know if we said let's design it to go to Ricky. It kind of is really what the defense gave us in terms of their blitz and us picking it up and making that play happen.
And then they have the ball late. You reference there's the famous Bert Emanuel, like trapped it, used the ground, overruled with, you know, they had work done and Mike Alstott, but Sean King, you know, didn't measure up to those guys. But you at that point are a spectator. So you had to be, how nervous are you as a sideline guy at that point? Because there's nothing you could do.
Yeah, there's nothing we could do. I mean, obviously, when we're looking at that game, and we have confidence in our defense the entire year, but all we needed was like a minute on the clock. Just give us, you know, even if they score, we felt like we can go down and score on them anyway. That's just the moxie or the confidence that we had in the offense. But our defense had played well that entire game. We just knew we had to go out and play, you know, make a stop, and you know, obviously they got it done. And you know, but as an offensive player, it's tough because you're watching it. You almost feel helpless because, you know, you want to be on the field and be that deciding factor in the game. But our defense came through and made plays.
What was the party like that night? Because, holy crap, this Rams team that nobody believed in or knew about is going to the Super Bowl. Although I think there was only a week, right? Didn't you have to leave the next day? That was
Fortunate. Unfortunate on both of our Super Bowls where we had to leave like the next day. So, I mean, we celebrated. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure downtown St. Louis was jumping that weekend. But, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, we had a week to go. We had to get our tickets. We had to start planning. We went in. So it was a fun time. And I know once we got to Atlanta, you know, obviously, you know, we had a chance to hang out and celebrate there some more. So
did you come out of that game thinking, I mean, obviously you're excited you win, but are you guys wondering, like, what did Tampa do to us defensively? Or did you just chalk that up to they're really good on D and it's we're fine?
That's what happened. We just chalked it up. They're really good. They got some good players up front, some good, you know, obviously Hall of Fame players up front. They played well. And then, you know, obviously we didn't score as much as we like. But at that stage of the game, Martin, to be honest with you, we're just happy to get that victory and go on and advance. I think any team that's in that situation, no matter the style points go out the window, you just want the W at that point.
So do you ever show Sapp the Super Bowl ring then? Do you remind – like what when he's talking about it, complaining, what's the rebuttal?
No, we got the ring, man. It wasn't a catch. That was it, man. You know what I mean? And, you know, and it's – because they feel like they're the best defense of that era, and obviously we feel like we're the best offense. So there's always some up and down, but we got that victory. And I know they beat us in the regular season a year later, but you know, obviously, you know, we feel like we're the best offense, and they felt like they were the best defense, and we stole their Super Bowl, if they say it. But, you know, obviously we got it done.
Was was Prohl, I mean, I'm sure he handled it fine, but I guess, did you ever feel sorry for a guy who had been one of your top targets on some bad offenses for a year or two, for sure in 98, and then he's just almost like a forgotten man? I guess there was sort of some justice there that he caught that ball, but that season, you know, Oz explodes and Isaac and Torrey are catching all the balls and Marshall gets a ton out of the backfield. Did you ever feel like – did you ever feel bad for him that year?
You know, he was a consummate pro, though. He was the guy that always just went about his business. I don't even think he – I didn't know that personally until you guys may have reported on it that he didn't even catch, because we were scoring like crazy. You just assumed almost that he had already gotten the end zone and he had done some things. But Rickett had on those 4-12 teams or whatever, you know, he was our offensive MVP. So we knew he was capable of doing it. But he had been in the league so long at that time. I think he was just more so excited to be winning. I think we all were, but he was just more excited to be winning and be a part of a great team. And he mentored a lot of those guys. When you got a young guy like Oz, Akeem coming in and kind of filling his role a little bit. No, he was still a professional and went about his business. And to your point, it was really fitting for him to catch that ball, because you know he had been through some of those down years too, and to still go out there and work and play, you know, and make that catch was huge for him.
Another reminder that you guys really did get along. Like, it was a group that liked each other. ESPN came in, they wanted to do a cover story, and I think Isaac or Mark said, "We're not doing it without Ricky."
Yeah.
So they had all the guys. I could still picture it at Rams Park, that photo that was framed.
Yeah.
Basically, they're like, "We're not doing this if you don't put Ricky Prohl in the damn picture," which is so.
Yep. It was special, man. Those guys all. I mean, we all were really, really tight knit group. Everybody's trying to win, trying to grind, trying to, you know, obviously be better professionals and win. So.
Then 2 years later, you get to host again. I mean, that's for a lot of guys that play in the league, that doesn't happen. And then 2 years later, you're back in the NFC title game. The Eagles are coming to town. And there's another game you were losing at halftime. I think it was 17-13 or something. Same vibe, though, or was there – because obviously the big story was how much you ran the ball with Marshall. Kind of like – and was that something at halftime where they said, all right, if we're going to win this damn game, it's going to be on the ground?
Yeah, it was tough. I know I got injured that game, which was really tough. I had a sprain in my MCL, which was really tough. You know, obviously came back in the second half and just with a mindset of just we're going to go – And run the ball and try to get up, you know, because we knew we could beat the Eagles. We had that type of confidence in Moxie again, but we knew we could beat them. But they were playing well at that time, and we just knew we had the firepower. And again, playing at home, it's a huge advantage to play at home in front of your home crowd, because it made it really tough on McNabb and that offense to get going a little bit. But you know, that comforts of being home and the confidence of being home made it that much easier to pull that game off.
I think Marshall, it was 31 carries for 159 yards, two touchdowns. And in that season, I mean, it was kind of rare to pound it on the ground, right? Was it because – was Philly trying hard to take away the pass, doing some stuff, dropping guys?
I think that was their game plan, because we were scoring so high and to Mike's credit, which, as you know, Mike Martz is pretty stubborn sometimes in terms of how he calls the game, and he's going to do it his way no matter what. And it just showed our versatility in our offense, because we could be a physical bunch up front and run the ball, especially against a physical defensive front. But what Philly did back in the day, Martin, is they blitzed. Jim Johnson, they would blitz like crazy. So every time to protect Kurt or protect our quarterback, you know, we would No, we had to run the ball to bring him out of a lot of that stuff. And if we can catch him on a blitz on the weak side and let Marshall, you know, skirt out the backside or something like that, I mean, that was huge for us. So they were coming with a lot of run blitz. We were exposing them a little bit, and we just kept feeding Marshall the ball, making plays until they dropped those guys in the box and try to stop our run. Then we could air it out.
There was a big party that night. I remember doing sports live. It was somewhere on Washington Avenue up there by the Schlafly. It was like an old house that turned into a club. And I try to get all these guys to come on our show. They're like, "Hey, dude, we're going to be up at this end." So we just, you know, the fucking annoying media, we pulled up with a truck at a party and set up shop. And I'm like, "Everybody's here. We're going to be able to get guests."
Hey, you can get anybody at that point, man, after a few drinks or something, man. You know, guys are, you know, telling it all, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. Keith Lyle's like, "Hey, man, when you need me? I'm like, well, I think we got Marshall and Orlando and we'll get to you.
Everybody's extra friendly that night, right? Hey, listen, hey, what do you need me? I'll jump on. I'll come on, you know.
Poor Keith Lyle. He was like my regular guest every Sunday, 97, 98, because the team was terrible. And we had like a post-game show every week, and I would be in the hallway, and our buddy Rick Smith, the old PR guy, would be like, it's going to be a little quiet today. I don't think we can get you anybody. I'm like, oh, come on. And Keith Lyle did that show like every week. And then in 99, the team's great. And he's like, man, you need me? I'm like, well, we got Marshall and Isaac and Orlando.
Oh, I'm telling you, man, it was tough. There were some lean years in there where you could tell those hallways were empty, where nobody wanted to talk to anybody. Like, people are eating lunch in their cars.
I love Keith Lyle, and we should talk to him at some point. He's just a funny storyteller, too. He came back. You guys had the 15-year anniversary. It was a Monday night game with the Fisher team. It was a terrible game. Shockingly, but it was, and we're standing, they're doing all these tributes. I'm on the sideline with Keith Lyle, and he's looking up at the banner or whatever, and he goes, man, I'm so glad we won that Super Bowl. Otherwise, you never have us jokers back, and we suck for a while.
Yeah, Keith was a good, yeah, he was one of those guys that was there in the early years, the lean years, man. So to get that Super Bowl, and I say this, the defense don't get enough credit. They played really well that year too. I know people often talk about the greatest show on turf and what we were able to accomplish offensively, but the defense played well, and those guys, you know, Keith Lyle and all those guys, T Light and all those guys, you know, they were well deserving of that championship as well.
Is there a ring then? You get an NFC title ring?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, which is really, you never really ever wear it. You never really, you know, just because if you win a Super Bowl, unless you're Roland Williams. Roland Williams wears every ring he's ever received. Let me just say that on every finger.
Oh, I believe that. And I think, did he catch the first Kurt touchdown?
Oh, yeah. That's on his bio, man. If you ever see, I caught Kurt Warner's first touchdown.
Oh, I told you, you can't introduce Roland Williams at an event without saying Super Bowl champion Roland Williams.
Oh, Absolutely.
And we could fall down a real well here, but the other Roland story I love, when he gets drafted, so it's 98, the year after you got drafted, he's in Rochester, New York. He gets off the phone and says, I'm going to the Rams. And his mom jumps up and goes, we're going to L.A. All excited, and he goes, Mom, they're in St. Louis now. She's like,
oh. I didn't know that. That's a funny story. I didn't know that. Yeah,
that's according to Roll. I wasn't there, but that's a big Rose Show story. Well, and we'll dig deep a couple weeks here before the Super Bowls and kind of walk through those games and those moments. But I'm glad you agree, because just those home games, getting to the Super Bowl and doing it on your home turf, is pretty incredible. Which is interesting, this week, Aaron Rodgers, I think it's his fifth NFC championship, but his first at Lambeau Field. They've always been on the road when he's played in these. Certainly different with, you know, a handful of fans in the stand. But do you think that's a little bit of an advantage there for Green Bay being at home, even without a full building?
Well, absolutely. I think they mentioned it last week when they had some fans in the building, and they thought it was pretty loud there. But I just think the element of the cold weather, which I don't think it'll bother Tom Brady in Tampa as much, but you know, obviously I think it'll be, you know, a really tough game. Even just go up in Lambeau and try to win a playoff game, and depending on the weather, they do play that up a little bit up there. So, but I didn't realize that was Aaron's first home playoff game, which is, I'm sure they'll probably stuff a few more fans in the stadium this weekend just to create that element of fan noise and that excitement.
Yeah, not his first playoff, but his first championship game. So
he's first championship game. Yeah, okay, perfect.
He's had playoff games, but he's never been able to. So he went to Chicago and beat the Bears to get to a Super Bowl. That was an NFC title game, but it was on the road. They lost at Seattle. They lost at Atlanta. They lost at San Francisco. Last year got blown out. What do you think motivates him? Because he was always ticked off that he didn't get drafted higher. Do you think the Mahomes buzz and all these young QBs, do you think he's a guy who always finds the edge to kind of have that chip on his shoulder?
Well, I think this year for Aaron, one thing that he's done, they drafted a quarterback. And I think, you know, he has a young coach come in. I don't think they were that favorable when he first came in. So he probably felt like he needed something to prove. And then they draft a guy. So it feels like they're trying to move him out at some point. And then, you know, so I'm sure this year he thought about that. But I think he's one of those guys, when you look at what he's done and the talent that he's surrounded by, Mahomes has a ton of talent. Brady now has some talent. those guys, all Breeze has talent. You see those guys, and he doesn't have much talent at all, and he's still getting it done, and, you know, which is a credit to him and how he carries his business. But, you know, when you're in that role as one of the best quarterbacks of all time, and then a team or a new coach comes in and drafts a guy, that's all the motivation you need at that point, just to go out and play and let them know you can still toss the ball around.
Do you think Bill Belichick is rooting for Brady? Do you think he's happy for him? Do you think? I mean, I don't know enough about their relationship. But I wonder, as a coach, how you would think, having all that success they had together, I would think you could still want that person to succeed. Although it makes their dynasty look different, doesn't it, Tom?
I don't know. I may have to disagree with you on that one, Martin. I think Belichick is probably, you know, he's probably a little upset. You know, obviously, you know, when you can say Belichick and Brady for a number of years has won the most in, you know, all those championships, and then you turn around and you look, it's kind of like when you break up and you look at your ex-girlfriend and she's dating somebody else and she's moving on and doing her thing and you're sitting at home. So, but yeah, I'm sure Brady probably feels a certain way too, because he was getting, well, you probably can't win a championship without Belichick. Belichick saying you can't win it without Brady. So it's one of those things where he's probably like, yeah, I made the right choice in coming down to Tampa, a different culture. And they're kind of taking some shots at Belichick. I know when you look at Gronk last week, he said that the difference between Arian and Belichick is, you know, he could be himself. So that you could try to see some chinks in that armor down there with the Patriots, and to see those guys navigate down south with Tampa and have success, that says a lot.
All right. All of that said, who wins? I just feel like Green Bay's playing at a higher level right now.
I do. But I think for some reason, as much as it's so easy to say Green Bay, I think Tampa, Tom, and that experience that he has, I think they could actually go to Green Bay and win. I really do. Just because I think they, you know, he understands the moment. He understands what he's trying to get done. And you know, I think they'll upset Green Bay and Green Bay. I know I said that. Now, maybe I'm saying that because you're a Green Bay fan too, man. I just want to – we can have something else to talk about next week if Tampa Bay actually wins that game.
Hey, for the record, you picked the Rams to win last week too.
I did. Aaron Donald, you know, obviously, even that game, when you look at the impact that he has, even when he's not, you know – if he's not playing well, it makes that defense struggle a little bit. And I know they're going against Aaron Rodgers and that group, but, you know, if you're not getting any pressure on that quarterback, it makes it a lot easier for the opposing guys. And he tried to battle through it, and obviously he couldn't. So,
all right, are we thinking upset in the AFC? I realize it's all – if Patrick Mahomes is healthy and fine, it's a different story. If he's not able to play or play effectively, Buffalo is really good and can be high-powered. I'm kind of afraid to pick that one. I don't care who wins. I know we have some Chiefs fans in the area that are passionate about it. I'm fine if they do well. I like Mahomes, but I don't have any rooting interest. I kind of think Buffalo might win. I don't know. I guess it's still going to come down to Mahomes.
I think the NFL really needs to watch this game. Obviously, in terms of their concussion protocol, they, you know, when you got a big name like Mahomes who went down with a concussion, stumbled a little bit last week. You know, all eyes are going to be on him. And one thing I know about concussions, if he gets hit one time or a couple times in that game, he could be out there in the first quarter. So, because those things kind of linger and kind of come up, you know, come back. So, but I think Buffalo is a high powered offense. I think what they're doing in Buffalo, they definitely have the skills to beat KC. But I like KC in that game. I think it's going to be Mahomes, you know, Brady in the Super Bowl. How about that?
So Mahomes and Brady. Okay. Look at you.
The league loves that. The league will love that, though. Two big names, young guy, old guy, you know. Even though I think we're all getting a little Brady fatigue if he makes it, though. Let me just say
but
that.
I don't think they can't really lose. If you get Mahomes and Rodgers, it's two studs. If you get Brady and Mahomes, it's the really older, really young. Or if you get Packers, Chiefs, there's history, Super Bowl history they could dust off.
Even with Buffalo, I think if Josh Allen evens, I think that's a big net. I think because Buffalo, the Bills Mafia, they can play that whole thing up. Just the city of Buffalo, small market. I think that'll be huge too.
Have you gone back to Super Bowls since you?
Yeah, I've probably been to every one probably in the last 10 years.
Well, you have.
I actually go to the games. Yeah.
Oh, look at this Hall of Fame treatment.
Yeah.
Now you can go to all the parties now.
Now I can go to all the parties, enjoy it, have fun, and you know, and do those things.
Does Carla get to go, or is it, no, this is a business trip? This is
No. I took her to the first one, and she won't let me go back by myself. So that's it. She's a part of everyone.
She saw what goes on there, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's much fun. All right. Here's a really random, okay, random story. So I'm on the radio in St. Louis on KTRS, and one of the hosts, John Carney, did a show with Marshall Faulk a couple of years ago. The host, John Carney, had Kara Henderson Snead as his co-host, and her husband was Les Snead, the GM. So they had a lot of football. It wasn't a football or sports show, but they're sitting down at the Dome for what turned out to be the last ever game that Thursday night with the Tampa Bay, it was against Tampa Bay. Anyway, Marshall Faulk is a guest on the show, and he's on site. He comes by in the concourse, sits down. So, like, for years, they keep saying, oh, Marshall smelled great. John Carney's like, well, you ask him what he wears? I said, I can't ask him what he wears. So I forget all about it. We had him on the show. They said, bring it up. I forgot. And now they said, have Orlando ask Marshall what cologne he wears. I said, he's not going to do that. Is there any good way for me to go about it? What's Marshall going to say if I text him, hey, what cologne do you wear? What you think he'll even respond?
First of all, he won't respond, number one. Secondly, I think it's a man law violation to ask another man what he's wearing, what kind of cologne he's wearing. He's probably changed, you know, from what was that, 10 years ago or whatever it was, or a few years ago?
Did he smell good, though? Do we know this?
I mean, it's all subjective, right? At some point. But that's one thing I will not be doing, asking another man, hey, man, what type of cologne is that you have?
All right. I will take this challenge upon him. I'm going to text him today.
Yeah, text him and see what he says.
By next week, I'll tell you.
If he responds.
I'm going to say no. Have a great week. Enjoy the football.
All right. You too, man. Be well.